brothers and sisters. Welcome to episode 5 of Racks, Fur, and Feathers. I'm your host, Brent Ruff, and I sat down today with Mr. Mustachio himself, as always, Adam Peterson and Ray Cole. Talked venison recipes today. Had a lot of fun, so I think you guys are going to enjoy this. Here we go.
Adam, this is pretty much yo shit. I mean, you are chef extraordinaire, no, Mr.
Thanks.
Mustache.
Yeah. So, I like to cook.
He prefers the term culinary genius.
Yeah. This is my old neighbor, Ray. Research Ray.
Research Ray. He was one of our two Facebook viewers earlier.
That's right. Behind us. That's right. So let's talk about venison. You put in the time to hunt. You were successful in your hunt. We told you, you know, basically how to cut it up. Let's do something with those cuts of meat.
Yeah, man, there is nothing better than opening up your freezer and seeing those little bricks of gold.
Right, right. Getting
burgers,
out meat.
Steaks, just for days.
You provided for your family. It didn't cost you anything more than the time that you spent hunting the deer. You know, the money you spent buying the equipment. And what are you going to do with it? Let's eat it. Venison is one of the most healthy meat out there. naturally lean. No growth hormones in it. You know, organic as they come. So, and it really, you can do anything with it.
Basically anything you can do with beef?
Beef. I like to talk about whitetail as kind of being like the goat of the forest.
High-speed beef is what Popsy calls it.
Yeah. Where this is one of the animals that you actually don't have to cook thoroughly. You can actually eat medium rare. You can leave a little bit of blood in the meat when you cook it. So that being said,
it's so lean venison that, I mean, if you cook it to, you know, on the more well done side of things, it's
right.
Going to be super, super dry.
Yeah. And so, tough.
Yeah.
Easy to overcook. Too.
And it is easy to overcook. Because generally, you know, some of your steaks are going to be a little bit smaller than a beef steak. Some of your cuts are going to take a little more finesse.
Well, yeah, we talked about butterflying the backstroke,
right?
So, like we said earlier, the thinnest part of the steak is the middle.
Right.
You know, so, I mean...
You definitely want to take more liberty if you are processing the meat yourself to cut the steaks maybe a little bit thicker if you can.
Right.
If you can afford to. It's really up to you. If all you do with it is make burger, there's an endless list of things you can do with deer burger. If you make your own burger, there's the question of what, you know, do you make it just lean meat or do you cut a little bit of fat into it? If you want to put fat into it, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. You can buy beef suet, mix that in. You can get pork to put in with it. I prefer buying some really cheap, really fatty bacon and just cutting that in with it as you're grinding it. That gives you, I don't think we do like 80-20 or anything like that. We keep
now, what's the advantage of having fat in your meat?
Oh, the fat keeps the meat from drying out. It it helps it not scorch immediately
right.
when it hits a hot pan. It kind of just keeps it...
Hold it together a little bit.
Yeah, holds it together.
Now, there is tricks. Like, I personally don't like to put any fat in my venison.
Right, I'm the same
when
way.
I grind it up. Now, what I do is for things like if I'm doing a batch where I know I'm going to use specifically four burger patties.
Right.
I'll put things like jalapeno, onion,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Cheese.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You know, and then freeze it that way. And then I know you're seasoning, your Lowry seasoning and
right.
your pepper. And then when you patty it up, you just throw it right on. And that cheese, what that does, it helps adhere that
meat together.
It's like a glue. Together. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because there's not that natural fat in venison. It's so lean.
Now, the fat that is on venison, we should have probably talked about this a little bit more in depth when we were talking about butchering. But what... Tallow is that real thick fat that's on the back. It's a real waxy, and it does not taste good. You don't want to add that to your grind, thinking that you're adding good fat. To
right.
Because it's not. I mean, it tastes like if you were to chew on a crayon.
Yeah, it's best just left alone. You know, when you take the skin off, you remove the tallow too. I don't know what you would save it for even. Maybe bird food.
You can break it down and make like candles and shit out of it.
Yeah.
I've heard, but I mean, who the fuck?
Yeah, well, I don't have enough time for that. But if people do, that's great.
Right.
That'd be another use for the part of the animal. So I'm absolutely all for
now,
that.
Now, like bear tallow, though. like that you can break down.
Right, bear fat
is for all kinds of shit.
Is a little bit different. I think it's more globular, whereas like venison fat tends to be, like you said, more waxy.
Yep.
A little bit harder, I think.
That's exactly what it reminds. If you grab it, it'd be like if you melted a crayon and then it dried.
Yeah, kind of like that, mixed with a bar of like half wet soap, sort of. It's kind of greasy a little bit.
Yep.
So yeah, for those of you out there that like to eat crayons or soap, you might want to save it.
For the rest of us, we'll, right. Like you said, I prefer myself lean meat when in the grind. I don't like any fat cut into my burger because I can add fat myself when I cook it. Like if I'm just frying up some burger to make tacos with, I'll put the burger in a pan with either some butter or some olive oil, and that fat will kind of, as the meat renders down, act as a protectant and keep the meat from drying out as much. And if you use butter, it gives it a good flavor,
and
too.
And we were talking about coal fat before. One of the things you can use coal fat for is, like, if you wanted to make venison meatballs, for instance.
Yeah.
Now, so you take your grind meat, roll it into your meatballs, and then put whatever you want to put in your meatballs, and then wrap it in that coal fat, and then it becomes, like, translucent, kind of shiny, glossy.
Yeah. You could also use it for a roast. You know, if you got a neck roast that maybe is going to be a little drier, you take that cow fat and sort of wrap it around the roast, you know, tuck it in a little bit, just one layer around it, and as that cooks, it'll render that fat into the roast and kind of baste it a little bit, you know, with that deer flavor that I particularly care for. A lot of people think that, you know, I don't want to eat anything that's real tough or real grainy or any of that, but I like to know that when I eat the meat, that it's from a deer. I like to taste that little bit of gaminess in it. And that's
there's nothing better than eating a deer steak and having some blood run down your chin.
Yeah. That's what's great again about deer is that you don't have to cook this well done. You know, with bear meat, you have to cook it all the way through because there's a risk of
trichinosis.
Yeah. And other parasite, I guess, diseases or things you can get that you don't really want to get from a bear. From a deer, as long as when you butchered it, there were no signs of, we also should have mentioned, tuberculosis, or, you know, when you look for signs of disease in the animal when you gut it, when you field dress it. A lot of times deer are a lot cleaner. So there's a lot you can do with it as far as cooking it. If all you do is make burger.
Well, and here's the thing, dude. If you're processing your own deer, you can do yourself a huge favor. Go out and get yourself a grinder.
Yes.
You can buy a hand grinder for probably, I think it's about $20.
$20 or $30.
Yeah, I mean, they're not expensive. My father bought a Popsy. He's been on here. A really good, it was on sale. It was like $250, but you could put like 20 pounds of meat up in that tray, man, and you could burn through some grind pretty quick.
An electric grinder?
Yeah, and it's awesome, dude.
Also, if you have like a KitchenAid mixer, they have
it'll pay for itself rather quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. The benefit of being your own butcher, besides just knowing, you know, having the knowledge of where your meat comes from and what goes into it, is also that it saves you a lot of money. You know, this is meat you're not going to have to go to the grocery store to get because you put 60, 70, 80 pounds of meat away during deer season, or more, in your case.
Right.
So this is all natural. You know where it comes from. You know what it eats. You know.
Yeah. When you think about grass-fed Angus.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. You want
for the price?
I know, man. It's ridiculous. Like even if you take your deer to a butcher to have it done and don't do it yourself, 80 pounds, and what would you say you get off a year and a half? Like, meat total, 50, 60 pounds?
If that, yeah.
I mean, if you're lucky, if they do a good job.
Right.
That's, fuck, price per pound.
It's
still winning, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's way better than paying for those grass-fed organic cuts of, you know, whatever you want to get from, like, Whole Foods. Not knocking Whole Foods, because I buy a lot of stuff from them, but their prices tend to be a little bit higher. You can get your own all-natural meat on the cheap just by doing it yourself, taking the time, you know, putting in the hours and the effort, and it.
Well, so, yeah, you look at price per pound if you buy a tag, and it costs you time. and sure. energy, but man, you get knowledge. There's something about when you're sitting at the dinner table, and what you're looking at in front of you is an animal that
you supplied.
Yeah.
That you put in the time and the work for.
There's something special about looking that animal in the eye before you shoot it, and then when you're sitting at that dinner table feeding your family with it. There's something really special.
It's a sense of pride,
about that.
And it goes back to our basic caveman instinct. Mm-hmm. You got a family, you want to protect your family, and provide. Providing is what makes our society flourish. People got to eat to live, and this is some of the best meat to eat, and some of the easiest ways to achieve it. On the cheap.
So yeah, everybody wants to tout that farm to table.
Right.
It's woods to table. I mean,
it doesn't get any more organic, or natural than this. This is.
Yeah. Well, we talked about earlier about it should be in the curriculum. There's that word again, Adam.
Curriculum.
There you go. That fucking thing. Anyway, so that those kids need to know where that shit comes
Absolutely.
From.
Absolutely.
And everybody needs to know. I mean, it's you look. Just look. Have you ever look up ag gag laws? Just look up what that is. Give it a Google. It's worth a Google.
Careful when you punch it in. Make sure you do it right.
Start punching in gag. Get all kinds of weird
all
shit.
All right.
Anyway, so, but yeah, just look into that. I mean, these animals live shitty lives.
Right.
Chickens piled on top of one another.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't think twice of buying chicken nuggets.
If people saw the Tyson chicken facility where they slaughter those birds and process them, mm-hmm. they would never buy a Tyson ingredient.
The conditions
yet.
They live in, it's sad. And the antibiotics they that's what or is antibiotics or steroids? It's,
both.
Yeah.
It sucks. But you got this animal that you harvested that had no idea you were there. It lived its life. It did its thing. And you were putting it to good use.
It's eating soybeans. It's eating field corn. It's eating, grass, beets, carrots.
Yeah, like they say, like bears, you could taste.
Right.
The
difference in shooting one in a blueberry patch as opposed
you can actually smell blueberries when you're gutting it.
Right.
And they're fat, they say, actually turns kind of a bluish tint to it.
Right. Yeah. Well, the phrase.
But if you have one that's a coastal bear and it's eating salmon every day, it tastes like fish.
You are what you eat. That's
right.
That's what you put in is what you get out.
It's funny. You can always tell a deer. I can now anyway. After doing so many of them, you skin it out. You can tell. Oh shit! That fucker's been in the corn like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
It's got all kinds of fat.
Yep.
Or a squirrel. Just get a squirrel out, and right away you notice, he's been eating good.
Yeah, squirrels are, maybe all the acorns or whatever they eat, all the nuts, all the high protein food that they ingest really packs on the loose fat, and they need it. That little rodent in the wintertime has to survive.
Delicious little bastards.
Oh, man. That's for a different episode. But
so, venison. Tenderloins, man. That's one of the first things you're going to cook up after you do your deer. And you brought over a doe tenderloin this year that my cousin's boyfriend, Shane.
Yeah.
And he had tried venison one other time, he said, didn't like it.
Yeah.
He tried that thing, he's like, dude, it was literally like melting in my mouth. How did you do that? Let the listeners know, and I want to know too. Because that shit was awesome.
Yeah, my wife loved your meat too.
Well,
that
night. I'm used to that. That's why I had to move away. Anyways. A lot of cooking is in the preparation. You know what it takes to cook a tenderloin, heat, something to cook it in and something to season it with, right? So you start with a hot pan. I believe on that one I used a pat of butter and some Italian seasoning and just threw it in the hot pan, like medium-high heat, probably for 2 or 3 minutes on one side. Flipped it over, had a nice sort of color to it. Hit it with just salt and pepper is all you need. The Italian seasoning and the butter. Kind of infused in the meat a little bit, 2 or 3 minutes on the other side, until I like to do when I flip it over, if I got good color on the one side, I watch it until the blood kind of starts to pool up on the top, on the side that's already cooked. When I start to see the blood come out a little bit, and you touch it, and you can feel it's starting to firm up a little bit, it's still kind of tender, you take it off the heat. And the most important part, like with beef, you have to let it rest. When it comes out of the pan, the cooking process actually isn't over with because you heated it up. Now it's still holding on to this heat, and as it cools down, it finishes cooking. That's why if you take a steak right out of the pan and put it on a plate and cut it, the son of a bitch bleeds all over the plate.
Yep.
If you let it sit there with something over it, another plate, just something to cover it, not necessarily smothering it, but just to kind of hold the heat on it as it cools down, it will redistribute all that juice throughout the meat. And then 8 minutes later, the steak's still plenty warm. You cut into it and it's got a nice red center. It's hot, it's juicy, it's tender, because you let all that blood sort of recirculate through there.
Instead of losing it, it turns into
It turns into flavor. More of a juicy flavor as it holds into the meat. And after you let it rest, you can do whatever you want with it. So that particular piece, I believe, was it cut up when I brought it to you, or I left it whole? And we cut it up there with
I think you brought it whole.
Yeah, you did.
Because we were cutting it with a buck knife, I remember.
Yeah, it was cold, so the butter that was in it kind
of... There was a lot of kind of mumbling going on. It was more like,
Yeah. But I brought it in a piece of tin foil and a plate, and it had kind of... It was cold. It wasn't hot anymore. But even when you cut that, it still had a lot of the juiciness in it. A lot of the tenderness was still in it because of the way that it was handled before. A lot of people that don't like deer meat don't know how to cook it right. It's, you know,
that's what I tell everybody that says they don't like it. You haven't had somebody cook it in a way, or it wasn't handled properly before they cooked
it. Right. There's a lot to do with, that's why you want to take good care of it when you butcher it. You want to make sure you clean it nice. When you cook deer meat, as a general rule, you don't want any of the silver skin that's on it, any of the fat that might be around it, any of that, anything but good red meat. If it's not holding that meat together, you know, you don't want to get into your ham section and start separating steaks out of there unless that's the way you prefer it. But all that connective tissue on the outside, the silver skin on your back straps, once you thaw them out, the proper way to clean them is just to take your fillet knife, get underneath that silver skin, and just kind of run
it
down.
It's tougher than you think. You can put quite a bit of pressure against it with the blade and run it right up, and it could be a pretty clean separation.
Yeah, the silver skin almost is like a thin leather, sort of.
Isn't that what the Indians use for their... Was that the sinew that you hear about?
Yeah, that's the same thing. The silver skin would be the sinew. Okay. When that dries, it would be tougher than hell. I mean, you ever had a piece of meat that's had some of that left on it? You know what I'm talking about. It's the thing that you can chew and chew and chew and never actually chew up. You either end up spitting it out or swallowing it, whatever you prefer.
But, we're not going to go down that road.
Yeah. So that's how that tenderloin came to be.
I just got to say, I'm really impressed that you didn't say anything smart-ass right there, Ray.
Well, I'm trying to keep it serious. I don't want to make it too
I was being
comedic.
Serious, too. We're still talking about your wife, though.
So, that's fine. We'll settle that after this.
Right. keeping it lean is also a good way to kind of keep it in your freezer longer.
I was going
to
say, to not have your neighbor... Take your wife, but.
It's all the fat that's in that meat that tends to spoil first. That's where a lot of the bacteria starts to grow. The fat will turn rancid before the meat will.
Right.
So.
So how about your roast? How do you do a roast?
It depends.
Let's go shoulder roast.
Okay. I would probably do it in a crock pot. You could do it in an oven. The way I do it, I like to build a good base for my roast to be in. Growing up, whenever my mom cooked a roast, it would be potatoes, maybe some white onions cut in half, and carrots in a crock pot with water and the roast. And she would dust it with a little bit of Lowry's and just a little bit of black pepper, and that thing would be like eating a football. That just tasted...
Lowry's is like the duct tape of the culinary world.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Lowry's will fix a lot of things, but in this case, it didn't go far enough. So when I got old enough to actually cook... I realized that you don't have to use water in a crock pot. You can use like French onion soup mix with a little bit of chicken broth.
Mm-hmm.
You can put things in there like minced garlic, shallots, white onions, not even cut in half, just cut into, you know, chunks.
And I think the listener needs to keep in mind, too, that the meat, when you have it in a slow cooker, will produce juices on its own,
absolutely,
too. So you don't
want
to overdo it on the broth or whatever.
Right.
You know, thinking, like, that's it, because once it starts cooking...
But you
want to
build a good base. For me, if I'm doing a roast, whether beef or venison, it's got to start with soy sauce, Worcestershire, probably in equal parts. I would put that in first, then I would dust my meat with this Lipton soup mix, the onion soup mix.
Yep.
Put that in the pan, the crock pot. I'd cut up some onions, put around it just enough to get around the meat without covering it, and then I would dust the top of the meat with probably garlic powder, maybe some onion powder, a little Italian seasoning, and I'd just let it go for a while. I'd let the onions in there on their own cook down with the meat probably for 4 hours if it's on low. If it's on high, I'd probably say 2 hours. Just let the onions break down in there, let some of that juice come out of the meat. And then, you know, I would probably put in some carrots, some baby carrots, or some quartered up red potatoes, and just let it finish up.
Hell yeah. The roast I just cooked, it had, I just took onions,
yep.
quartered them.
Yep.
Three onions, two little bags of baby carrots, yellow potatoes, chunked yep. up, a shoulder roast. And what I did is I just take a packet of McCormick's savory pot roast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Pour that on the bottom and then double the water it calls for.
Let's say this right now, too. There's no shame in using those.
Oh, hell no.
They make those packets.
It's quick and easy. And look, it's quick, it's easy, and you throw it in the crock pot. You throw it on low. You leave it for a couple hours. Come back, throw it on high at the end. It's amazing. And you'll be left with just nothing but bone.
Right.
The kids will love it. The wife will love it.
The meat stays juicy.
And let's go back to burger. And Ray, you can vouch for this, to start getting your family introduced to venison, the easiest way is to use burger.
Right.
To introduce it in ways in like spaghetti, sloppy joes, tacos.
Yeah. yeah. You can hide it behind
hamburger helper. It goes a long way in hamburger helper.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. The funny thing about that, I'm only two seasons deep from hunting and, you know, bringing my own meat home. Not the neighbor's because he's gone now. So, but seriously, with burger, I had to give it away. We wouldn't eat it. The wife wouldn't eat it. She didn't like it. Didn't like the flavor. Now she's putting it, you know, making sloppy joes, tacos.
Chili. Chili's a really
lasagna,
easy one.
Chili.
Yep.
She's like, oh, we're out of beef or, you know, hamburger meat already. So like,
anything you can use hamburger that you would buy at the store for, you can use venison burger for.
Absolutely.
And the only consideration you might have to take is if there's not fat cut into the burger when it's processed, you have to somehow supply that fat. You know, be it with olive oil or bacon grease or butter or whatever you want
to
use.
Right. And one thing to point out, too, is I will say that, like, if you're trying to introduce your family to this thing and you're cooking in the kitchen, the one thing you're going to notice is venison does have a gamey smell when you're cooking the burger.
Right.
Like, if you're browning it for whatever, it does have a funky smell. So I learned a trick. So you take it out of the freezer.
Yeah.
Let it thaw for, like, 15 minutes, just enough to where the plastic kind of separates from the meat.
Right.
And then slide it out to where it's a brick, and then just keep flipping it in that pan and scraping off the meat.
Right.
You'll never get that smell. Just keep seasoning it on the way. And the beauty about venison burger is you don't have to drain the shit.
Right.
When it's done cooking, there's no grease, there's no nothing. You can just go, bam. Yep. Don't got to get the strainer out for nothing.
Yep. You're not worried about getting rid of all that extra grease from the fat that rendered down when you put it in the pan, because the only thing that's in the pan is what you wanted to be there. So you can take that if you're making like hamburger helper. You throw the rest of your ingredients in there, mix it up, and you're done. You don't have to get out the strainer, strain off the fat, you know, none of that stuff.
And I got a good burger recipe, as a matter of fact. It's a meatloaf, venison meatloaf.
Okay.
Now, like I said, I don't add any fat to my burger when I grind it up.
Right.
And you take a meatloaf pan. And then you take your meat in a mixing bowl, and you add your breadcrumbs, your seasoning.
Mm-hmm.
What else did I add? I add an egg.
Yep.
Mix it all together. And then what I do is I take a layer of meat, and I put it at the bottom of the pan and line it up. Now, this is kind of a branch off from the meat eater, or Steve Rinella's recipe for his meatloaf. It's a more basic version of his. He wants pine nuts and all kinds of weird shit. But... So you line the bottom of the pan with some meat.
Right.
Then in another pan, you're gonna put in some butter.
Okay.
You're gonna mince up some garlic.
Yep.
Probably two cloves. And then you're gonna take some a whole onion and some spinach, and you're gonna put it in there, and you're gonna cook it until the spinach wilts.
Right.
Once the spinach wilts, you take all that stuff off, all that good shit, and you put it on the meat and spread it out, and you leave about a half inch gap
between all the way around the edge of the pan.
Yep, all the way around the edge of the pan. Then you take, and you can use whatever cheese you want. I used the block Swiss. I couldn't find block provolone.
Yeah.
yeah, oddly, that's hard to find for some reason.
At Walmart.
Right, well, hey.
Get your shit together, Walmart. So anyway, I...
saying that for years.
Right. So you cut up the Swiss.
Yep.
Fairly generous, generously thick slices. Cover your spinach.
With cheese.
With the cheese.
Absolutely.
And then you take the rest, the other half of your meat, and cover that all back. But you kind of crown it to where it's higher in the middle. And then you take a good seedy mustard.
Yeah. Like a whole grain mustard.
Yeah, and you kind of spread it over the top like that and throw that bitch in the oven. Actually, I can't remember how. I think it was like 400 for 30 minutes or so.
Right.
Because like I said, venison is supposed to be cooked rare. So if it's undercooked a little bit, you're not going to get sick. It's not going to hurt you at all.
Yeah.
If it's a little undercooked, just stick it in for a little longer if it's not to your satisfaction.
And with burger.
But that's a really good... really good meatloaf recipe in general. You don't even have to use venison for that one.
No, a meatloaf with cheese in the middle and spinach sounds delicious.
Oh, absolutely. Now, we talked earlier about like when you're gutting the animal.
Right.
And we already talked about the coal fat, what you can use that for. The liver, I'm not a liver dude.
I'm not a liver fan either, but I know people that are that prefer venison liver, particularly like a year and a half, year old deer would I guess have a better flavor for the liver. I can't vouch for that. I don't eat the stuff, but the heart is really something special.
The heart is it's a new thing for me.
Yeah.
But I gotta tell you, man, I love it.
Yeah.
We were talking about shot placement in episode one, counting back ribs.
Yep. Yep.
That's part of the reason is I don't want to fuck that heart up because I want to eat it.
Yes. That's what I said. I don't prefer to shoot in the vitals because I don't want to damage the heart.
It's one of my new favorite cuts of meat.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And there are so many things you can do with it.
And when you take it out and you keep it, what's mitochondrial fucking whatever the shit that sack it sits in? So when you take it out, you can set it on the grass and in the leaves and shit, and it's not going to hurt it. You got that little protective membrane over it, if you will.
Right.
Freak out when it's all dirty and you think you're fucked. Like you could take it home and slide it right out of there.
Right. Usually, I cut it out of that as I'm gutting the deer when I get the heart out. But I bring a quart bag with me in my backpack when I'm hunting just for the heart. I come prepared so that I know when I cut that heart out, I pull it out of that sack that it's in. You know, I cut it. I don't leave any of those tubes or whatever attached to it. I cut it as close to the heart as I can.
Oh, you do that out in the field?
Yes.
Okay.
Just so I don't have to mess with it at home.
See, I'm just simple. I just slice it away from the lungs and then throw it in a bag or whatever and lay it on the ground. But I have forgot it out there, too, with that doe that we drug a mile and a half that day.
To each their own. But that's because I like it so much, that's one of the first things I take care of when I'm field dressing my deer is I'll get the heart out straight away.
My brother was laughing at me. During gun season, he was sitting south of us down there, right where I gutted my big one, and I was sitting with my kid. And I'm like, oh shit, I gutted that thing and I forgot the heart. Will you grab that heart, please? It's like, you got a plastic bag with you? Can you grab that for me?
If not, just put it in your pocket.
He's like, I feel like a serial killer right now walking out of the woods with this heart.
Hey, good on him.
But it's good, man. It's really good. And so what I do is when I get home, that's when I do that. It's kind of core it like a bell pepper is kind of how I look at it.
Yeah.
Cut the top off where the stem is, you know what I mean?
Right.
Just kind of get those
valves or whatever.
Valves or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
And the first thing I noticed about the heart is it's really lean.
Yes.
But when you eat it, it's got a different texture.
It tends to be a little more firm.
Does that change if you boil it? Because I've heard about people boiling it, and it also helps suck out the blood.
You know, I don't know about boiling it. What I do with it, what I get my heart, is I'll take it home and I'll put it in. First of all, I'll rinse the whole thing out under some just room temperature water. I'll kind of let the water run in the top, and I'll kind of pump the heart a little bit to get some of that coagulated blood out of the heart. Because inevitably, there's going to be some blood stuck in there. I will take the whole heart and I'll put it in a bowl with some salt water. I put the salt in, then I put the water in, then I put the heart in, and just let it sit in the fridge for a day. The salt will help draw a lot of that blood out of the heart and make the heart just a little more cleaner.
less gamey tasting.
Yeah, I guess. I've never noticed a gamey taste to the heart, but that's because I always soak it in the salt water, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it tasted gamey. I take that back, because remember that first time Ray was there, the first time I ever cooked one.
Right.
I cut it up into like two steaks.
Yeah.
You know, I threw it on the grill and I cooked it just like I would a steak. And it was the flavor was really good.
Now, but when you clean your heart, that's what I do, and I take it out of the salt water, I'll rinse it off again, and then I'll cut it in half, like you said, almost like two steaks. And I will take, there'll be these little stringy things inside the heart. They look like little nodules or whatever. And you want to try and trim them out. I take those out, and I take any of that white part of the heart, that fat that looks like, even if it's real thin on there, I try to get that off there as much as I can, because that will give it that gamey flavor. When that renders down, that's where you get that. Probably could tell it came from a deer sort of taste to it. And then my favorite thing to do with it either is to leave it, like you said, as two steaks. Once you clean out all those little nodules out of the inside of it and just season it up and throw it on the grill, you know, char it a little bit on one side, flip it over, char it again on the other side. With the heart, salt and pepper, I think, is all you really need, just so you get more of that natural, delicious heart flavor.
Well, I'm going to tell you my new favorite heart recipe.
Yeah.
I chunk it up into these little, like, half-inch chunks.
Yeah.
Throw it in a pan again.
Yeah.
It's funny. Like, you think venison, like, anymore, I'm always thinking garlic. I'm always thinking onion.
Onion.
Every time. And olive oil. But
you can't go wrong.
Right. I mince up some garlic, throw some onion in a pan, chunk up the heart, throw that in there, some Lowry seasoning, some pepper, cook that, and then I take that, put it on a plate. Then I take my eggs, scramble some eggs up, throw the eggs on top of the heart, and then I take spicy ketchup, sriracha ketchup. Best thing in the fucking world, dude. Spread that shit over the top. That is the best breakfast. Your farts will smell like death for about 3 days after that, but they're awesome.
That's a good good disclaimer. When you eat wild game, it'll make your toots smell a little more rich.
You said toots.
Yeah.
Yeah, your wife might make you sleep on the couch for a while, but it's good shit, man. It's really, really, really good. One of my new favorite cuts of meat. I'm one of these days I'm going to do the liver thing. I'm going to do it just to try it. But I think it's more, like, to me, the texture would seem like it would be like the canned cranberries you eat at Thanksgiving.
Like a jelly sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, just a basic description of something livering, like, oh, it's livering.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a turnoff. Yeah. I mean, that's where that term came from.
And I've heard it's bloody, blood tasting.
I ate it when I was a kid. That's why I don't eat it now.
But it's weird. Like, I like rare meats.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Just the way it's been described to me doesn't sound very good.
No. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, liver's gross.
Oh, how about tongue? Have you ever done the tongue?
I have not, to my knowledge, ever eaten tongue from a deer. I've had beef tongue before. That's not bad. From a deer, like I said, I know a guy that does it. I always save my tongues for him. He takes them, and he'll clean up all the dirt or whatever that's on the outside, rinse it off real good, and then you boil it.
I just want to back you up for a minute. Removing the tongue.
Oh, that's a fun job.
Right, so you want to cut the bottom of the jawline, right?
Okay, so you have your deer head, and you'll have it upside down so the snout's pointing away from you, and you'll see the jawline running on the bottom of the jaw. You want to cut down either side of the jawline until it kind of comes back into a triangle. And
basically just pull the tongue out.
You reach in there, wrap your fingers around the tongue through the hole that you made, and kind of peel it backwards, and it comes out as one piece. You don't really have to do much cutting. You could probably just pull it right out.
Yep.
And then you're left with, it's surprisingly big. It's like a...
See, that's funny, because I've heard a lot of people say, like, tongue's really good, and they like it, but as far as taking it out of whitetail and mule deer, that there really wasn't much reward for your effort, so they always just left it.
Yeah, I guess it's not anything close to the size of a beef tongue, obviously.
Or elk or buffalo.
Right, but those are bigger animals, so
right.
It's going to be... There's more to it than, you know, just with the tongue that you see. There's a lot of meat behind that and attached to that, so.
So now back to how he cooks it.
Yeah, he'll clean it up and he'll boil it. I don't know for how long, until, I would guess, a half hour, 45 minutes. But it's got a skin on the outside of it. And once you boil it, you kind of let it cool, and you peel that skin off, and then you can do anything you want with it. That basically is the edible part of the tongue. You could cut it up, put it back in the pan, saute it, put it in like some pasta, some rigatoni or something. You could, I'm sure, just fry
it on a cracker with some salt.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever you wanted to do, I guess, with tongue meat, but he said he really likes it.
It's, how would you describe the texture?
I've never actually had it, so.
Beef tongue.
Beef tongue is kind of stringy. It's kind of like, kind of like taco meat. If you ever had shredded taco meat?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Really?
It depends on how you cook it, but.
That's a cut of meat that I would think it would just freak people out more than it's a tongue more than yeah. anything. Like the flavor wouldn't scare them. It would just be the fact that they're eating.
And that's, you know, sure. A lot of our food-based fears are the perception of what, you know, who wants to eat a tongue. But if you served it to somebody and didn't tell them what it was and just let them eat it, they'd probably like it. If it's cooked right, you know, like with anything. If it's treated with the proper amount of respect.
Well, here's a crazy one for you. Last episode, you mentioned eating coyote and you never have, and I said
right.
I did.
Yeah.
One of my old bosses, I trapped a coyote, skinned it out, and I was telling him, I'm like, man, it was crazy. I was like, I was kind of considering cutting out them back straps. I'm just seeing what it's all about, but I've heard it tastes like shit, and I was like, I'm kind of weirded out by eating a dog, you know? And he was like, well, cut them out, and I'll take them. I'll see what I can do with them. So I cut out the back straps, gave them to him the next day.
Yeah.
Weeks went by, forgot all about it. Comes back to work with some jerky.
Ooh.
Here you go. All right, so everybody's eating it, and they don't ask what it is. I'll tell you after you eat it.
Right.
When I started hearing that, I knew exactly what it was.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Fucker. But it was good.
Really?
The jerky was really good. Granted, it was. We talk about high quality cuts. That was
right.
a very high quality cut of meat off of any animal.
Sure.
It's the backstrap. But very good. Jerky's, if you marinate anything long enough.
Yeah. You can make jerky out of like an old shoe. If you got the right seasoning on it, it'll probably be edible.
Yeah.
It's all in how you treat it and the process that you use to treat it with.
Yeah. I mean, and another thing that before we go too much further, before I forget, we talked about boning out a ham for smoking, brining
right.
and smoking.
Right.
So you got your ham, your venison ham. Now, I've always had this fantasy of smoking the ham stuffed with a bunch of good shit.
Right.
Like potatoes and onions and carrots or whatever. Haven't done it yet. And then, like, you know, folding it over back over on itself and tying it with some twine or something.
Right.
And smoking it. But and I haven't done that yet. But I will tell you, just brining it alone and smoking it by itself. God, that is so good. But let's talk about what a brine is before we really get into that. So
okay.
A brine is salt and sugar, right?
Right. It's a salt and sugar solution that you marinate, for lack of a better word, you let things soak in to enhance flavor, increase tenderness, make it a lot more juicy. Usually you brine something when it's going to be under like an intense amount of heat for a short amount of time just to help it kind of hold on to more moisture and
right.
more flavor.
But your basic ingredients, salt, sugar.
Salt, sugar, yeah.
Water. So trying to remember what I used for the brine on the one we smoked at deer camp, I want to say I used, I know I used garlic and onion.
Yep.
Of course.
Naturally.
Pepper, Lowry seasoning.
Right.
Brown sugar and kosher salt. And water. I forgot how much exactly, but I mean, you kind of eyeball it.
You can look up brine recipes all day long.
You throw it in a Tupperware or whatever, you throw your ham in there and let it
right.
soak. And I mean, you just make it so it covers most of it. You want to let it brine for, what'd you say, 2 days at least?
Yeah.
Because you want to flip that thing eventually.
It depends on the recipe, how big the meat is that you're letting brine.
You want to allow as much time as possible for that stuff to
yes.
soak into that
yeah.
meat. So when you're done brining, you take it out of the brine, you want to put it on a rack, dry it off.
Right.
Then, before you smoke it, you want to give it a good dry rub.
Right.
The one we used up north, whoa, that was not way too salty.
Yeah.
Do you remember
what it was? Or
a lot of fucking salt.
Yeah.
It was
way too much damn salt.
No, it was cayenne pepper, a lot of salt in general. shit, I can't remember. What the hell? It was just a bunch of random spices that we had in the cabinet up there at the cabin. But my brother had brown sugar, a lot of brown sugar. That was kind of like the base, you know.
Right.
My brother was kind of trying to walk me through it. I had never rubbed one down before. So I'm like, what the fuck? I thought you'd just go buy this shit.
Right.
He's like, no, I'll throw a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Well, I ended up putting a little bit too much of the damn salt in there.
Right.
So it didn't turn out as good as it could have been. But I did it again at home. I just kept it real simple. I put Lowry's pepper, a lot of brown sugar, some salt. That was it. Mixed it together, rubbed it on there real good.
I like, particularly with venison, to keep things kind of simpler.
I like the taste of the meat has its own.
Right. That's kind of what, why we...
And plus, when you're smoking it, that adds a whole different ball game.
Yeah, you can get into different layers of flavor there with what kind of wood you use for smoke, what kind of, you know, dry smoke, wet smoke, all that stuff, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, you let this thing will feed, if at six people with deer camp for a couple of days. So you rub it down with that. I like to get my grill or my smoker about as close to 300, right between 200 and 300. Throw it in there and just keep an eye on it. Keep a thermometer on it.
Yeah.
I like to get it to when it's about 160 is when I call it good.
Is that the
internal temperature?
Right. As measured by a thermometer. A
meat thermometer, right. I'd usually go to the thickest part of the meat, stick it in there. Like I said, my goal is 160. Once it reaches there, I'm good, and I take it off. But you want to keep a close eye on it. You want to keep flipping that thing. When you're smoking meats, like mine has my grill has a sidekick.
Okay.
So the heat source
is actually in the sidekick.
Yeah, so what you gotta keep rotating that thing, or you're gonna burn the shit out of one end of that. You can't just throw it on there and walk away. Plus, you gotta keep the temperature up. That's that, man. You just slice that into some slices. You can just eat them.
Yeah.
Eat them like slices of ham, or
put them on a sandwich. Yeah.
Right. Dude, it's fucking amazing. So and you could the sirloin tip roast is in on that action. It's part of that ham. So you can even if you remove the sirloin tip roast. Like we said before, and isolated by itself. If you change your mind and don't want to do jerky with it,
right?
You can smoke that thing by itself, or you cooked it for one of the get-togethers you had not too long ago. You said and sliced it in the steaks after cooking it in the oven, and that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really lean meat. I mean,
right?
It's good stuff,
packed with a lot of flavor as long as you don't overwhelm it with seasonings. That's why we talk about onions and garlic. It doesn't need maybe a little bit of Lowry's, you don't need to cover it up with things. It's sturdy enough to stand up if that's what you want to do. But if you want to taste the meat itself, salt and pepper, a little onion powder, a little garlic powder, and that's all you need.
Yeah, I mean, you just keep it simple. Me and Ray always say, whenever we're cooking something new, Lowry's seasoning and pepper.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's all you need.
It's a good standby.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good general rule. And like I said before, whenever you're cooking these cuts of venison, just if you want to keep it basic and spice it up a little bit, still garlic, onion. You can't go wrong with that mix.
No, you really can't. Butter-flavored Crisco.
Right. And, and you can do, when you grind your meat, we were talking about adding fat to it. Adam does, I don't. There's no right or wrong way to do it. You just kind of go, I can taste the pork fat when somebody has it in there. And to me, it just kind of turns me off. It's not bad. It's not to where I'm not going to eat something, but it's just kind of.
It's not the pure straight up
100%. Right. And burger patties, if you do grind it lean, there's all kind of, I put cheese in mine to help adhere it.
Right.
But breadcrumbs.
Yep.
Just simple, plain breadcrumbs. Throw some of that in there. I used to add one egg per pound. And mix it all together.
It's like a binder.
Yeah, so when the egg, it's kind of slimy when you're patting up your burgers.
Yeah, but they turn out well.
Yeah, but as they're cooking, that egg cooks in there, and it just holds everything together.
Right.
Feta cheese, puts chunks of feta cheese in there. That's a good way to do it.
We used chunks of Swiss cheese one time, and actually it was right after we found a bunch of Morel mushrooms. So we cut up the Morel mushrooms with the Swiss cheese and made mushroom and Swiss burgers. You just pack it in, and I mean, it's it's pretty damn good.
Right. I mean, get creative with your grinds too. I mean, we haven't even got into sausage.
Right.
Summer sausage.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That'd be a whole different. Yeah.
I'm a extreme novice when it comes to that. So, if you've got some info, I might have to pick your brain up.
Well, I know just enough about it to be dangerous, probably. I've never tried it myself. I know a guy, his dad makes some really good stuff. I know how to do it. I've got everything to do it with. I just haven't done it. It's something that we've always talked about, kind of wanting to do, but I just never found the time or never made the time to actually try it. So,
right.
It's definitely interesting.
But bottom line, hopefully this at least gives people kind of a baseline to work with more than anything.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much specific recipes as it was just trying to give... So you can try to introduce this stuff to your family without having them run for the hills.
Right.
Because it's like a first-time impression. I mean...
It's versatile
first
enough that you can...
First impressions mean everything.
Yeah, it's versatile enough sure. You can hide it behind a sauce, or if you want to present it just on its own, it can also do that. You know, you can make it a side dish or main dish. Just eat it, you know. Try it. Don't be afraid to.
And like I said, I mean, a lot of people's wives would probably be pretty... pissed off if you made something and then just snuck it to them, but just tell them, like, look, I got this deer, I got this burger,
right?
I'm gonna try this,
right?
Like, chili is the easiest thing. You cannot taste the burger in the chili, but it just puts them at ease.
Yeah,
it gives them the peace of mind.
That's
like,
a tough
oh, that
part.
Wasn't so bad.
Yeah. If you have a bunch of beef eaters, then that's all, you know, they've had.
Right.
Liked. I mean, that,
right.
That bar is up there as
oh,
far
yeah.
as taste, especially.
Right.
People are used to what they're used to.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of people, you know, don't like branching out and trying new things because they get set in their ways.
Yeah.
And if you can introduce people to this in a way that doesn't scare them away immediately, you know, it gives them a chance to keep an open mind and enjoy
exactly.
themselves.
Yep. To try it another way.
Yeah.
Another way.
Right. And, you know.
Yeah. And like,
you can win them over.
We talked about Shane coming over and trying that tenderloin.
Right.
I have a fucking badass jalapeno and cheese recipe for some backstraps that I'm gonna have to save for another episode because that's just too good for this one. But
all right.
and, you know, he tried that, loved that.
Right.
You know, and I cooked some backstraps on the grill when he stopped by the one day, tried some of that. He's like, every time I try it, it's awesome. And this is from a guy that tried it once years ago and
right.
kind of vowed never to try it again.
How old is he?
Yeah, and you.
I was the same way, actually, yeah.
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 When I was a teenager.
How long was it before you tried it again?
Oh, God. At least 10 years.
Right. And then,
come back to it and
decide
it.
Yeah, full circle. Yeah. No, I love it.
It's deep, man. It's deep. When you eat an animal that you kill, there is a connection that you can't compare to anything else.
It goes back to just our primal instincts, you know, hunting, killing,
and that's
eating,
part of the reason.
Living.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason I like doing my own deer too. Like we talked about before, I love that shit. I put in the work, but when I sit down and I'm eating that shit, I know exactly where it came from,
right,
from start to finish, from the woods to my plate. I know exactly where that meat's been and exactly how it's been handled.
Your hands were the only ones that touched it, and there's a overwhelming sense of pride when you can supply that for your family, for your significant other. You know, you sit down to a meal that. Maybe you got a garden in your backyard, so you grew the tomatoes and the potatoes and the lettuce, you know, self-sufficient, which is something that a lot of people nowadays aren't. So.
Right. Well, like we said, hopefully this gives you guys the courage to get out there and start getting in the kitchen and mixing things up a little bit.
Yeah.
Again, if you guys have your own recipes that you guys want to throw at us, please do. I want to start a segment here soon, I'm thinking, where we do like a recipe.
A listener recipe maybe? Or
Yeah. Read it off. Give us specifics. We'll read it off. We'll throw some of our own in there.
Yeah.
Because I got a lot of specific recipes I wanted to talk about. But
yeah, me too.
I mean, we could keep going on this episode for hours. So shoot us an email. raxfurandfeathers@gmail.com, not N like the podcast
it's
is.
A-N-D.
Are you guys tired of me saying that yet?
Yeah, spell it out.
hit up our Facebook page, Rack Furs and Feathers Podcast. There's a group you guys can join. Hit us up, let us know. We'll keep rolling with these.
Thanks for listening.
That's it, boys and girls. We did it. I hope you guys had a good time. Keep your ears to the ground for episode 6. We're going to be sitting down with Chuck Powell talking trapping, so... I think you guys are going to have fun with that one.
Special thanks to Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com for our artwork and our theme music. Special thanks to Kyle Palmotter for taking care of all of our editing. Special thanks to Eric and Michelle Fisher for letting us sit in their house and record this episode. Follow us on Twitter at RFF Podcast. Look us up on Facebook, Rex Fur and Feathers, or shoot us an email with any questions, comments, or criticism at RexFurAndFeathers@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you next time. See ya.